And now for the main message, our pastor, Mr. Steve Buchanan.
In 67 AD, Peter sent his second letter to the Church of God in northern Galatia. We don't have record of him traveling to the area just south of the Black Sea, but that's where he sent his letter. It would be my suspicion, that he traveled there. We don't have a record of his accomplishments there, but I would surmise that he was probably there in the same way that Paul went to the areas that he sent letters to later. Now, the introduction of 1 Peter, don't turn there, the introduction to the first letter of Peter shows who he was writing to. He's writing to the 12 tribes of Israel and to the churches that were established among the 12 tribes of Israel, not just the Jews who were centered in Palestine, but by that time, Mr. Tanner's given some excellent studies and sermons on this particular topic too, and I have, although they're not as good as his, but I've given some information on that, where the 12 tribes went, where the rest of the 10 tribes went. And they were up in that area just south of the Black Sea. That is why Paul was forbidden to go there in Acts 16. And so other apostles went. Probably Peter went. I don't know for sure. Guess maybe we may never know. So the gospel was taken in obedience to the command that Jesus had given to the disciples. He had told them to go to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. So was he there? Very likely. Very likely. To these members, Peter gave some important advice about Bible prophecy in chapter 1 and verse 19. This would be 2 Peter chapter 1 and verse 19. He said, "So we have the prophetic word confirmed." We have the prophetic word confirmed, speaking of lots of other things that he had been taught as a Jew of the early first century, which you do well to heed as a light that shines in a dark place. So it guides. The house was so dark the other night that when I finally went to bed, I mean, there must not have been a moon out. I can't remember what phase the moon is right now, but it was so dark. Usually we've got a little ambient light coming in from the from some point, some of the windows, and it must either have been cloudy or there was, it was a new moon or whatever, but it was so dark that I walked into a place where I'm never walked into before. I walked into the back door in our bedroom, and I thought I was, it took me a while to get reoriented. But if you have a light, I turned on my little phone, if you have a light, it guides you, it helps you to understand where you are. So as a light that shines in a dark place until the day dawns and the morning star rises in your heart, knowing this first. Now, sometimes I think this is misinterpreted. This particular phrase is misinterpreted. Funny, because it's talking about interpretation. No prophecy of Scripture is of any private interpretation. Sometimes I think that has been lifted out to apply to you as an individual, that you can't understand, you can't privately interpret outside of the context. That's not what it means. What he is talking about is that the prophets themselves did not interpret the message that they were given. They didn't add on to it. They just took the message as it was given to them, either by an angel or by a vision or by God, and they wrote it down. They didn't, they weren't editors, in other words. They were just scribes in this sense. For prophecy never came by the will of man, but holy men of God spoke as they were moved by the Holy Spirit, as Peter was. So the preface to this passage, which you can read easily on your own, the preface to this part of 2 Peter 1 is Peter's own experience in being an eyewitness to the transfiguration in Matthew 17, I think it is. He includes his own experience in a vision with all the prophets, with all the rest of the prophets. They didn't come up with this information on their own. The holy prophets of God. The holy word of God is the prophetic utterance which was not subject to human viewpoint. It came directly from God. The other point is that these prophetic messages become clearer and clearer the further we go forward in time. That ought to be plain, right? As we approach the event, things come into sharper focus. So all of us would do well to heed the prophecies as a light in a world of darkness, which is guiding and encouraging us, inspiring us prior to the return of Jesus Christ, because that is the next ultimate event. I mean, that's the glorious event. That's what we're focusing on. That's when everything begins to be solved. We're pointing to that time. So today the purpose is to cover several New Testament prophecies, just three. They're enough to make the point that as we move forward to the fulfillment, we can understand more. And to Peter's point, it doesn't change the prophecy itself, which we take as face value. That's going to happen, but maybe the focus becomes a little bit more clear as we go forward in time. So the title of the sermon is Startling Prophecies of the New Testament. What's not so startling is the fact that you've read them 100 times before or more, and you know them, but maybe as we approach these events, and maybe we see things coming into clearer focus now, you know, I don't want to be known as a prophecy nut. I don't want to be known as specializing only in prophecy. I know I'm a nut. Okay, I heard that, right? I get it. I just don't want to be a prophecy nut. I don't want to be one of those guys that is trying to figure out timetables, got vast charts here, and, you know, I'll put a spreadsheet on the screen for you and show you the exact time when Christ returns. We're not going to do that. But I want to be known as that. But I think the understanding of prophecy, which is at least a third of the Bible, probably more than that. Mr. Armstrong always said a third. I think it's probably more than that. I think it's very important for all of us who live at the time of the end. And I think that we realize that we do live at the time of the end. So I think it's important, but not for the purpose of establishing, okay, this is going to happen next. And I know this event. I know this specific thing. No, to make you a better Christian, to help you to be motivated to respond to the laws and the commandments that God gives to all of us. In order for us to move forward, though, I'd like to cover 4 premises. You could call them points, but I always say points, so I'm going to change it up, and I'm going to say premises. 4 premises. No, these are things, that's a joke. These are things that I think it's essential to have as kind of the background filter of what you're studying. And I've thought a lot about these things. I've thought a lot about these underlying conditions at the time of the end. And I'm going to share them with you. I hope they're helpful to you. They may be, okay, been there, done that, Steve. Okay, fine. But now I'm just getting there. So welcome me to the party if you've thought about this all along. You know, hey, I'm a little late. As one of Steve's bosses used to tell me, well, you know, you finally come along, a little late to the party, but welcome, you know, enjoy. He did. You know he did. Yes. I'm not going to mention his name. The first premise, and maybe this is just so blatantly obvious to you that, you know, and I'm now the last person to arrive, okay, but be that as it may, I'm going to share it with you, whether you like it or not. End time prophecy alerts us to conditions in the world that are far from ordinary. Let me explain. End time Bible prophecy helps us to understand the abnormal from the norm that we have experienced. I know that many in our congregation here in Tucson came into the church in the 60s and the 70s. So that means that you have been around for a long time, a long, long time. And you've read the same prophecies and you've tried to make sense out of it. And you probably were like you know, my grandson, when he first started playing with the blocks, trying to put the square peg into the round hole. Boom, 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 bam, bam, bam. Okay, Tim, it's this one here. It's this square. Okay, then he'd do it over and over again. He got it. Sometimes I know that I've read these scriptures, and I've done that, you know, probably 40 years ago when I first talked about them in a sermon. And I'm thinking, yeah, I got that. I know what that means. And no, I didn't. I mean, it was like, maybe I should know it. But it's like Peter says, it's like as the dawn comes, you begin to understand more and more. And probably you should, right? As you get closer to the event. Right? You should. But the Bible warns us that if you depart from the faith, you'll forget all about it. But anyway, I digress. Bible prophecy helps us to understand what is abnormal. And what some of these things are still going to seem abnormal right now. Just going to let you know. From the norm that we've experienced all of our lives, because let's face it, even though the church has been proclaiming the return of Jesus Christ imminent in our lifetimes, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, it hasn't happened yet. And we've had like 40, 50 years, some 60 years, some of us, to just live life, which is great. We were on edge all this time because we thought it was going to be 2 years from now, 3 years, 3.5 years from now, 1975 in prophecy, and so on and so forth. Okay, at least it kept you alert. You know, right? I mean, okay, hasn't happened. But during that time, you've lived in peace and safety, and everything else has been great. Your life has been great. You've had some trials and problems along the way, but Bible prophecy is really abnormal when you speak about end time events. It's not normal like we've lived. And I think 2020 is kind of like a landmark year in which, whoa, wait a minute. Definitely not normal. I'm not ascribing any certain prophetic thing to 2020 or the coronavirus and all that sort of thing. Let me give you an example of something abnormal happening. And maybe a lot of people have had this happen. I remember the first time, this is going back to 1974. At that time, Steve and I were in college together. Everything's going great. You know, we're at God's College. We're at the West Point of God's work. We're at the Sandhurst of God's work because we're in England. But and they told us that. But among a lot of other things, toughened us up. But we were there, and all of a sudden, budget cut time came, and they decided they're going to close down this whole campus. Now, for those of you that were never there, you can't imagine how magnificent this piece of property was. It was truly, I still believe this, and maybe Steve agrees or not. Now, Pasadena was kind of the crown jewel. The campus there was great. I mean, beautiful. It was like a postage stamp compared to the campus in Brickwood, which was sprawling and had a farm on it and beautiful buildings that had been restored in an architectural way. I mean, we're talking about granite columns and large porches of walkways, which were beautiful, and gardens, and you just can't believe how nice it was. And all of a sudden, somebody decided, we got to pull the plug on this. And as soon as that happened, I saw the first person that I'd ever known leave the church. And they were angry, and they were mad, and they just took off, and nobody ever heard from them again. And that was a shock to me. That was abnormal. That was such a shock to me at that particular time to see, and maybe you had that experience too, when the first person that you knew left the faith. Abnormal. Abnormal situation. Oftentimes, Bible prophecy reveals something that seems so far-fetched to us at the time that it's difficult to believe that that could happen. So keep that premise in mind. Prophecy is an abnormal explanation of something that seems, it just seems very abnormal to you right now. And it probably will for a while. Premise number two. You are church people. You are good. You love the law of God. You love right and wrong. I hope. And I am going to suggest, maybe not in every case, but I'm going to attribute to the audience today, like myself, a certain amount of naivete, in a good way, in a very good way. although you've been warned for years about how wicked and horrible and wretched this world is, blah, blah, you tend to think of things in a far different way than what the world really is. Now, this may not apply to you. If it doesn't, then bypass premise number two. You believe in the Bible. You believe that what God says is true. But it's kind of difficult for you, for many of you, maybe not all of you, to apply in certain situations. Well, it's very easy for you to apply in a good way what the psychologists say projection is. Do you know what projection is? Projection was developed by Freud, so we probably should dismiss it altogether right now. But I think there is something to it. In your case, your projection is kind of a good thing. I want to make you aware of your projection and your natural inclination, which may be there. Maybe some of you are more cynical and negative. I don't know. But here's the point. You obey the law. You love the law. You play by rules. You play by rules, and you like fairness. And for the audience that is listening, this is kind of the American ideal. This is the way Americans are very much. Freud postulated that people tend to see their own inadequacies in other people, and in a negative way, they project their own negative tendencies to other people. But as a member of the church, having God's Spirit and a good person and living this normal life that you have for the past 50, 60 years that you've been in the church, and nothing has been too drastically different for you, you transition from one year to the next. Life has been good. You live in America. Life has been good for the most part, far different than many other parts of the world which we could describe. But Freud said, you know, the bully would project his own inadequacies and feelings onto other people, and that's the way he would beat them up, because that's the way he felt about himself. He's kind of really doing that to himself. But to compound this projection idea, as a good person, you also want rational, logical explanations. Go back to point one. Bible prophecy often doesn't give you that rational thing because things begin to pick up in speed and they become abnormal. Comprehending the illogic of the abnormal is sometimes very difficult for people whose intentions are very good themselves. Now, this may not be a blanket thing. Again, move on to point three if you know, you can bypass this. I know that I'm speaking to an audience that has different points of view, etc., etc. But as a good person, you've got to think a little bit differently about the world that you live in. And I know that you've been taught, you realize the world, you know, is, you know, that you read the Bible, of course, you know certain things. But it's still difficult for you, or for some of you, I should say, to make this transition. Because in America, you have been used to seeing eventually the right overcomes. Good things happen in the end. As I mentioned several weeks ago, you know, the cowboy rides in and fixes things in John Wayne's westerns, which are some of the best movies that were ever made by Hollywood. You know, John Wayne comes in and saves the day, and everything ends up happy. That's kind of like the way our lives have been, really, when you get down to it. So you need to think differently. I've given sermons about being positive, seeing the glass half full. Great. That's my mantra. That's the way I live my life. That's the way I think is most healthy, at least for me. But here is the danger. As a good person, the tendency that you may have is to project your good nature onto others and expect them to always play fair, especially if they're the leaders of society, for them to play fair and do the right thing. Eventually, they'll come to their senses, the idea is, and they'll be reined in by the rule of law, because we are a nation of laws. I remember Margaret Thatcher, saw her speak in person. She said, and I was stunned, she said, "I've always admired your rule of law." And I thought, wow, that's really something. And it really, you know, got to me at that particular time. You have a godly nature, and it helps if you will understand the vile and abnormal aspect of evil, and sometimes I would just say that's difficult for some of you. It's hard for you to understand that there are people there in life and in the world, even now, that are vile, abnormal, vicious, wicked, evil people, because you're not that way. See what I mean? You're a good person. You're a good person. You have compassion. You react properly to the unfolding events of Bible prophecy. True. But in order for, I'm going to give you an antidote to if you suffer from this, it's not suffering from something, it's bad. But if this is you and if it describes you and you have a certain naivety about you, about the world that you live in, I'm going to give you an antidote. Or the Bible gives you an antidote. I give nothing. But the Bible gives an antidote to that. In order for you to really react properly to the unfolding of events of Bible prophecy, you are going to have to get real. You are going to have to understand things the way they really are, especially when things don't affect you right now personally. You got to get real. You have to understand the world around you. But it's kind of difficult because projection, your goodness, you tend to do that. Believe me, I know you do, because you're good. You're led by the Spirit of God, and you tend to see the world from that standpoint, which is a good thing. I'm not criticizing anybody, but I mean, I apply it to myself as well, because every day I look at things that are happening in the world and say, that can't happen. You know, we've got safeguards in our law, in our institutions to stop this, prohibit it. But it's not. It's not. So here's the other side of this projection thing. You should understand this. Evil people are out there, and they impugn their evil and their wrong motivation to everybody else, especially the people they don't like, and especially sometimes to good people. Good people, we could call them righteous in a physical sense. They have no problem believing that their opponent is filled with the same wrong motivation that they have. It's called projection. Because it reflects their own vicious, evil ways. And they think if they think that way, then, and these are anti-law, godless monsters, and they are out there, and they think that way about everybody else. They project their evil attitude. So you can project either way, no matter what side of the coin you're on. They suspect and accuse innocent people of their wrong motives, or they don't care because they're filled with so much hate and venom, and I'll explain some of those in just a minute. Premise number three, I'm not trying to make enemies here. Just remember I said that. I'm not trying to make enemies here. I'm just going to be blunt. You're ready for it? Doug, you can handle it, can't you? It doesn't apply to you. You know you can handle it. That's why you're nodding. The head in the sand approach. The head in the sand approach. Terry and I talked about this at length. I mean, we talk about a lot of things at length now that she has her office set up in her home. Talk more than we ever have. It's great. It really is. She grew up in the church, and she helps me to understand these things. And I'm not saying she's a universal example for everybody. She grew up in the church, and you know, she's studied more about world news in the last 12 months than most people, I dare say. She's got some of the news running in the background while she's clicking away on the keyboard. I have to tell you how she has a special keyboard. It's one of these keyboards that is, you know, like, it's special. I could never type on it, but it's ergonomically designed. You know, part of it's over here, part of it's over there. It's a weird-looking thing, but she is so fast and so intent. She wears out keyboards. She wears the numbers off of the keys themselves. We had to buy extra key letters to paste on there. So you know what they are. I mean, for crying out loud, they're all bare. I mean, we had to replace them. But she types like she walks. Sorry, too much information, I know. But anyway, Terry Terry grew up in the church, and she admits to kind of the, in the early days, we're going back to the 60s, it may not apply to you, it may apply just a little bit, may not apply at all, so don't take offense. But there was such an emphasis by her, in her church area, of avoiding the world, avoiding anything in the world, that, you know, the most important thing was God's kingdom, and everything else is put on the back burner. And so, and she was a kid growing up too, so we have to take that into consideration when you're 6 years old and things make an impression on you, right? I mean, and, but the whole point is sometimes that applies a little bit, and I'm just saying if it applies to you, use it. The head in the sand approach, it's very difficult to keep up with what's going on in the world. And so it's a lot easier to focus in on the future, the coming kingdom of God, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But your duty as a Christian is to know what's going on in the world. It really is. So the application of this head in the sand approach may be a little selective. We've been trained to be alert to the world around us, but some members have been conditioned to disregard the day-to-day, you know, hey, things are going to change, you're going to get better, and focus on the kingdom of God. So if you combine that with the world is bad approach, which, look, when I came into the church, that's what we were taught. World is bad, church, God, good, world bad. It's a very simplistic thing. But sometimes some few may have ignored what's going on in the world. But the good news is that you can now begin to accurately assess the times in which you live, and you can do that through understanding Bible prophecy. And I'm going to tell you that it is your Christian responsibility. You need to be involved in understanding the who, what, when, where, and how of the world. Bible prophecy can help you with that. John was writing in 1 John 4, test the spirits. Test the spirits, whether they're of God, because there's many false prophets in the world. It's a good information. It's good. It's advice to you as a church member not to have the head in the sand approach. The last premise, number 4, is I've given before. And I think this is especially true of the church of God, and not just United Church of God, but all churches of God, to a greater or lesser extent, all right? It's not a universal blanket thing. It's assigning moral relativity to this world. Because since the whole world is bad, everybody's bad. You know, it's all bad, and everybody that's not called is bad. Now, that is a very blanket exaggeration. I'm exaggerating for the point. For the point. Do not assign moral relativity to everybody. You know, one side is as bad as the other. Until God calls them, they're all bad. No, you can't do that. Because I've found in my professional life and career that there are actually some good people out there. There are people that love the truth. They just haven't, the only thing that separates them and us is they haven't been called yet. Chances are that many of them will be called at some point. Well, we know eventually they will be called in God's plan. But don't be a moral relativist, because you're going to miss some of the nuance. Not everybody is perfect. People have problems. We had problems before we were called into the church. But you can't assign a moral relativity to every single person out there. Otherwise, you're going to miss a lot of good. And I would just say this. We were so involved pastoring two churches for 9 years in the 80s. We missed a lot of good music in the 80s. That music is bad. We even went to, I love 80s rock now. Okay, I'm sorry. Sorry. Some of you are going to say, oh, what a horrible person. We went to a refresher program for ministers in which they decried MTV. Nobody watches MTV anymore. But back that time, MTV was the horrible evil of life. You think I'm kidding? Ministers would go home and they would get their teenagers, large teenage groups. They would say, bring all your records. And a couple of them had record burning parties of rock music. Okay, so anyway, moral relativism. I'm using music as an extreme example here. There are good people in the world. God so loved the world. There are good people outside of the walls of this church. Got neighbors that are good. I'm going to talk about one of them today. Let's get to the first prophecy, though. All right? 1 Timothy 4. 1 Timothy 4. This is one of those passages that I know early on in my ministry, I probably thought, yeah, I got this. I know this. Yeah, this is happening now. We've had like 40 years since then to reevaluate some of this. But it's really abnormal. And some of this, you're still going to have to kind of take at face value. Some of it has been fulfilled in terms of Timothy's life, Paul's life as a type, perhaps. I wouldn't be a bit surprised if it all didn't come true again. And I think I think it will. But this is difficult because it's abnormal. It's apart from the norm, and sometimes it affects the church. Sometimes we've gone through those times where we have understood, okay, yeah, that's happened. It's easy to see that there could be a falling away because we've had people come and go and leave the faith, etc. The Spirit expressly says that in the latter times, some will depart the faith. Yeah, some have. Has that final fulfillment come? I don't know. I can't tell you. That's why I think it's good to always remember, hey, we can go through time and it can have multiple applications. Giving heed to deceiving spirits and doctrines of demons. This is not mentioned in exactly the same way elsewhere. I mean, Paul is speaking about a prophecy that either was a matter of God's Spirit moving him directly, his time in Arabia with Christ and being taught by Christ. But doctrines, James Fawcett and Brown commentary says, the doctrines or teachings that are suggested by demons. Now, that's kind of scary stuff. Teachings from Word Studies in the New Testament, teachings proceeding from or inspired by demons. How do you go from godly teachings to falling away and following doctrines of demons? That seems like a chasm. I mean, there's like, whoo. People leaving the faith to embrace deceiving spirits and doctrines of demons, what could that be? Okay. There may be some secular application here as well, just to expand your mind. I'm not saying it's a fulfillment of Bible prophecy. We know that there is a prince of the power of the air. And Mr. Armstrong was so right in saying that he broadcast in attitudes, and you could see attitudes in people. You can read attitudes in people as long as you understand that you're not to use your goodness as a projection to everybody. Yeah, certainly, maybe the alternate of that is the fact that sometimes, you know, if you mix that in with all the world is bad, that you can't see anything possibly good happening. But I think you get the point. There is a balance here in all of these premises that I've given to you. But verse 2 says, speaking lies in hypocrisy, having their own conscience seared with a hot iron. I believe that you can see that being played out in a secular fashion today. If you're paying attention, you know, if you're astute and aware, which you should be, you too over there, you should be astute and aware, I believe that you can see some of this happening in the world today. As long as you don't assign moral relativity, all the world is bad, this guy's bad, that guy's bad, no matter if this guy believes in law and order and this guy believes in anarchy, you can't, you know, assign moral relativity just because, you know, as the old saying goes, the world is going to hell in a handbasket. You can't do that because there's still good. There's still good. The Bible began to be printed, what, in Germany years ago. Gutenberg invented the printing press. The Bible began to be widely available and began to be available in England. And the gospel began to go out from the United Kingdom to people that had never read the Bible before. They only had the church to tell them what the Bible said, and a lot of times what the church told them was wrong. But the Bible began to be printed, and it was so enlightening that it changed behavior around the world. It really did. But also what began to be printed at that time were the philosophies of men. And I believe that the devil seized upon this with the anti-God, anti-religious movement that was springing up in the day, in the philosophers, which people go to college and study for 4 years and end up with a worthless degree. Except for the professor of philosophy at the feast a few years ago in Steamboat, who heard my sermon on the philosophers of man and said, "Mr. Buchanan, I want to talk to you." "Okay. I've been in the church for 30 years and I am a professor of philosophy." Uh-oh, what's coming next? That was the first sermon that I've ever heard in the church that actually got it right. "Well, all right, he's my new best friend." His degree was worthwhile. His single degree was worthwhile. Of course, I'm kidding. All right. The study of these philosophers, Descartes, Darwin, and other writers of the anti-God movement, sprung into action as soon as the Bible was printed. And so it was a philosophy that germinated for centuries, and then in the 18th and 19th centuries, it got bigger and bigger, this anti-God movement, the rationalization, the humanization movement. And it ended up in World War I and World War II. Not to go into the sermon again, but these philosophies of man, the beginning of the God is dead movement, these illicit philosophies originated in the minds of these perverse individuals, and you dig deep into their minds and you see how wicked and evil and how they are. They attempted to explain man's existence apart from divine revelation. Now, maybe they just didn't know better, but, you know, the Bible was there. These ideas seek to destroy any knowledge of God, and they lead man down a wayward path. And they're horrible. They basically teach that whatever you want to do is up to you. It's the same satanic message from the Garden of Eden. God is holding back. So these guys decided, hey, anything goes. The end justifies the means. Winning at all costs. You know, your parents may have jokingly said, ours did a few times, "Do as I say, not as I do." And you realize that's hypocritical. That's not right. Even as a little kid, you knew that. There are those who believe that the end justifies the means, and they can tell you, their loyal subjects, you must do this, and you must do that, and you must do this. But then what do we find out? They're not subject to these same arcane, crazy rules and regulations that they impose upon you. It's good for you to do it, but they don't have to because they're the intelligentsia. There have been, in the last year, don't want to spend too much time on this, but a multitude of people in high places who have mandated rules, regulations, and restrictions upon their citizens, but they flaunt them in the most egregious of ways because, you see, doesn't apply to them. We had recently a former elected political leader who's a leader of the environmental movement flying his private jet to, where is it, Greenland or Iceland? I get those two mixed up, to receive an award for his great environmental leadership because he's so against carbon and global warming. And when he was questioned about it, he says, "Well, I need to. I have to do this because I had this award, and I couldn't sail in a ship across the Atlantic Ocean. I had." What he basically said was, "I have to do it because I'm so important to this movement." You know, I mean, I don't care if he does. I wish everybody had a private jet because it wouldn't change the Earth's temperature 0.1 of 0.01 degree. But we all don't. But he does. But it's hypocritical. But the other part of the scripture is telling lies in hypocrisy. And they repeat things they know are untrue, but then I guess, like Hitler said, or what Hitler, Goering said, you know, tell a lie big enough and often enough, and people are actually going to believe it. And they do. But I believe that's a secular explanation, and I think that you should be on guard against the philosophical and religious implications of this passage, but it shows you how people can lie and how they are hypocritical, and it helps us to understand that indeed we are living in the latter days, because I guarantee you, as a kid that grew up in the 50s and the 60s, there was a time when that kind of hypocrisy would not be tolerated. Would not. You wouldn't be able to get away with it in the media. You would not. Even up into the 70s and the 80s, there was a time when you couldn't do that in this country and get away with it. So all of this stuff in a secular way, we're talking about secular leaders, blah, blah, blah. It's all done under the guise that we're protecting you. We're telling you what's good for you, and you know, it's our job to do that. And I gave a sermon not too long ago in which I said, you know, look, I've been studying this for so many years, so many times the experts are wrong. You know, it's their own ideas, their things, they're talking about this and that. You know, New York, Los Angeles, they're all going to be submerged in water by 2014. Didn't happen. Okay. Little break from all this serious stuff. Most of you have been to our house. You know we live in a little tiny gated community of 50 homes, right? They have a homeowners association because our streets are private. We got to pay dues to keep up everything. It's a modest place, really. Those of you know that. It's not, when I say gated community, it sounds like it's some, you know, 5,000 square foot mansion or something. It's not. It's like 4,000 square foot mansion. Just 2,100. Okay. The first person that came to see us on the block was my buddy Ron. And I didn't even know he lived in the neighborhood, but we had been friends for a long time. He had actually helped us with the feast, put some people up on the Catalina Mountains, up in the foothills, because he, you know, rented out some condos, and they'd used them years before when the feast first opened here. We hadn't used them for a long time, but they're up by Skyline Country Club, and some of our members stayed up there. So anyway, and I knew him through other ways. You know, we played golf and sort of, but he came over and he said, hey, I saw you moved in the neighborhood. Yeah, we had a good friendship already. Well, we had at that time, maybe a little bit afterwards, we had guys with clipboards, you know, part of the neighborhood association. They'd go around. You know, they do this on a Saturday morning when we're at church, but they're not there anymore. They went off to do something else useless, like run for a school board or something. But they were officers of the homeowners association, and they would walk around and take notes on everybody's property. You know, you got one little weed, you know, you get a letter in the mail from the homeowners association. You got to get rid of that weed. Well, to Ron's house, they said, you got to paint your fascia board. And, you know, we were talking about it, and I said, well, show me. And, you know, it's on a side of the house you couldn't even see. And so he politely told him, you know, look, I'm going to have a addition put on the house. The addition's going on the house. I'm not going to paint anything until, because that's coming down. I'm not going to paint it. It was a fascia board and, you know, the side of the house or whatever. I'm going to have the addition on the house and, you know, I'm not going to do anything till then. Gets another letter. You know, please comply with, and then they cite some rule of the homeowners association, or else you'll be subject to a fine. Then he didn't do it. He said, look, guys, I'm not going to do this. I've already explained myself to you. But with this attitude, this bureaucratic attitude and this authoritarian attitude, it doesn't matter what explanation you give. So finally, he's had his lawyer send him a letter, say, stop your harassment or we're taking you to court. And then it stopped. But then he got a letter. He says, make sure you submit your plans for your addition to your house to the architectural committee. It never ceases. It's like, don't be the guy with a clipboard. Because nobody likes you if you're the guy with a clipboard that has no sense and doesn't really help anybody yourself. It's just that you complain about Ron's house. Okay. These individuals, there are groups of people that do not obey the basic tenets of the law, and you should not trust them. Hold on, let me get back. I think I Okay. Hold on. For those of you just tuning in the first time, this happens a lot. You know, I lose my place. Go off on a tangent. Okay. Do not... I had... Where is it? Oh, you know what? I skipped over a part here. This is bad. This is really bad. This is so bad. But you didn't know that I skipped over it. Now you do. Bad move, Steve. Okay. In Matthew 10 and verse 16, I could have done this a little bit more adroitly after preaching for over 40 years, but Christ told his disciples, "Behold, I send you out as sheep in the midst of wolves. Therefore, be wise as serpents and harmless as doves." I forgot to give you the antidote earlier. This is the antidote to all of your kind of everything is good, projecting good. Sorry about that. Loses its impact now, so I shouldn't have even said it. No, I'm going to bring it back, and so you're going to understand this. Christ knew in sending his disciples out that they were going out into the world. And you talk about projection. He knew that there would be the tendency, maybe Freud didn't come up with this at all. He knew that there would be the tendency of them to be as wise as sheep and as harmless as serpents. So, you know, he knew that they would have the wrong projection. He knew that they would be sheep. He did. He knew that they were going out into the world and that they needed to be prepared and that they needed to be wise as a serpent and harmless as a dove. We got three animals there, and I'm getting them mixed up, I know, but you get the point. He knew that that would happen to them. And so maybe he's the one that came up with projection in the first place. Don't you be innocent sheep projecting your goodness onto evil men and evil women. Going on in verse 3, now this is where kind of becomes difficult to understand because it's a little bit more abnormal. And from a spiritual standpoint, we've never seen this happen. I mean, you've seen it happen maybe in the Catholic Church, to be quite honest, forbidding to marry and commanding to abstain from foods which God created to be received with thanksgiving by those who believe and know the truth. Now, in Paul's day, this was fulfilled in part. It was fulfilled in part by the Gnostic philosophy and a subset of that being asceticism, which was denial, and Paul speaks about that in Colossians, denial of things that are actually, that God says are good for you. God made animals that are good for you to eat. And it's difficult for us from a spiritual standpoint to see that there might be a departure from the faith and people saying, you can't marry when God says that's good. Now, does it apply universally at the time of the end? I don't think so, because Christ said that, you know, the time of the end is going to be like the days of Noah. People are going to be giving in marriage and so on and so forth. But from a spiritual standpoint, could it get to that point to where somebody is telling you as a spiritual leader not to marry and not to eat certain foods, maybe to become a vegetarian, even though God has already said, you know, it's something that he has blessed? Clean foods, obviously. That's where the abnormal comes in, because it's hard for us to see that, right? So we just kind of have to take that from face value. But could people say, could they come up with something and some kind of deception? Well, we've seen them come up with all kinds of other deceptions that people have been compliant to. So it could happen. There are so many permutations that this could take that it, you know, I won't speculate as to how this is going to happen because I just don't know. And there are a lot of things that we don't know about prophecy. We'll just have to be aware. But as a Christian, you should be aware that it could happen, that some spiritual leader could tell you that it's wrong to get married or to eat certain foods that you know that God has given for men. You know, in our world today, we see things turned upside down. We see them, you know, good looks bad, bad looks good. The Bible prophesies in the Old Testament that that would happen. We see that there are evil people out there, and we see that there are good people that unveil some of the chicanery and some of the nonsense that goes on, like Project Veritas, which was recently delisted on some social platforms. And they exposed a couple of years ago how these abortion clinics are selling baby parts for profit. You know, how hideous, what godless monsters these people are. And why there's not more uproar about that in the world today is shocking. I guess we've just been battling abortion for such a long time, since 1972 and Roe versus Wade. But it's a horror on the national conscience. It makes me sick to think about it. It's absolutely sickening to see what they will do to the unborn. People might say, how can you call out the leaders of the day? It's like one of my favorite singer-songwriters who was asked, you know, how do you write these songs? And I'm almost thinking to myself, how can you not call them out? How can you not be angry about what's going on in the world today? How can you not cry out about the abuse, and especially this one? It's one of the most blatant of all national public sins, but there are a lot of people that hate it, right? Those are good people, and you should congratulate them. We're not activists, you know, from the sense of, you know, trying to tear these things down. That's not our job. Don't get me wrong. But boy, oh boy, these are lawless, without conscience, hypocritical liars who impose and project their evil motivation upon decent people. And that is a thing that is happening in the world today. So you could say it's happening on a secular viewpoint, but Timothy's prophecy is coming along just fine. As for me, I back up PETA. You know, you've heard of people for the ethical treatment of animals. Well, I believe in the other PETA, people eating the animals. That's who I am a part of. So, 2 Thessalonians chapter 2. 2 Thessalonians 2. And verse 1, very significant and startling prophecy of the time of the end. I'll clear up a few things here. We've covered this before. But now, brethren, concerning the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ, so it's the return that they were interested in and our gathering together to him, we ask you not to be soon shaken in mind or troubled either by spirit or by word or by letter, as if from us, as though the day of Christ had come. The topic is the second coming. There are going to be troubling times. I talk to a lot of people in the church, out of the church. Many people that I talk to believe and agree that this is the most confusing time in our society that they have ever lived in. So times are changing, Bob Dylan said. Verse 3, let no one deceive you by any means, for that day will not come unless the falling away comes first and the man of sin is revealed, the son of perdition, who opposes and exalts himself above all that is called God or that is worshipped, so that he sits as God in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. Now Daniel 11, Matthew 24, Luke 21, all show Jerusalem is made desolate by an abomination, as happened in ancient times, vis-a-vis Antiochus Epiphanes. It was he who placed statue of Jupiter in the temple in Jerusalem. It was an abomination. They cleared out all the Jews. They massacred a bunch of Jews. The town was desolate. But in the future, we see a beast. We see a beast army surrounding Jerusalem and a false church leader imposing himself in Jerusalem. Now, my brother Hugh has an interesting theory, an idea. He could be right. Luke says armies will surround Jerusalem. Luke 21, Matthew's account shows something or someone standing in the holy place. And Paul's explanation about this false prophet is that he's sitting down in the holy place. You know, when someone sits on a throne, that's when this is Hugh's idea. And it may have some merit. So I'll throw out Hugh's speculation, and people can be mad at Hugh if they think he's wrong. I love my brother, so I like to share his ideas. When you begin to sit down, that's when you begin to rule and issue edicts and warnings and you issue laws. And so you should have gotten out of Jerusalem by that time before that happens. Verse 5, do you not remember that when I was still with you, I told you these things, and now you know what is restraining, that he may be revealed in his time. Now, this is where this particular, in virtually all the English translations, this is so hard. The next couple of verses are so hard. What does all this mean? He is restraining, who's restraining, blah, 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 et cetera. For the mystery of lawlessness is already at work. Okay, well, we get that. From Paul's day, the secret, the mystery, godlessness, lawlessness, people that abrogated the law of God, that was beginning. The changing of the gospel message. Everything was beginning in the first century already. Yes, that's true. Mystery is secret here. Paul knew that the truth was being compromised shortly after the early church had begun. The secret is that the true nature of this man of sin is anything but godly, because he's going to be doing all these signs and wonders and miracles, and people are going to think he's God incarnate. This individual is going to have demonic power, Paul says, and Revelation says. Simply put, he is going to be the most powerful religious figure in the history of the world, obviously accepting Jesus Christ, but in a false way. But he is going to seem as though he is the returned Christ. The English translation says, only he who now restrains will do so until he is taken out of the way. What does all that mean? Well, I've compared like 50 English translations, and I think I can explain it to you. The mystery is the lawlessness. Okay, so far, so good. You understand that. Lawlessness has been around a long time, but what about the rest? I believe that this is the intent. He, that is God, has restrained this mystery of lawlessness. Well, now he's restrained it for 2,000 years. Until that restraining power is removed. Kind of like if you examine Job, Satan couldn't touch Job until God said, okay, just don't kill him. God restrained him from doing what he wanted to do. There's a point in time where God allows the restraints to occur, to be removed. That's the intent, I believe, of this verse. If you believe differently, then we can discuss it in the chat. This complements the prophecy of, don't turn there, Daniel 8:23, just jot it down, where it says that in the latter time of their kingdom, when transgressors have reached their fullness, it's going to crescendo, it's going to get to a point to where it's really unbelievable. You know, this individual changes times and season, as it says in Daniel. And in verse 8 of 2 Thessalonians, it says, then the lawless one will be revealed to us so that we understand who that is, this false prophet, whom the Lord will consume with the breath of his mouth and destroy with the brightness of his coming. So years, number of years, this prophecy in verse 8 covers. And Revelation 19 shows that he will be thrown into the lake of fire. The coming of this lawless one is according to the working of Satan with all power, signs, and lying wonders. So that's going to be part of the revelation when you see those things happening. But it is definitely the false prophet of whom it is being spoken of here. I don't think that we can imagine how this will quickly sway the perception of the world, but it is destined to. Verse 10, and with all unrighteous deception among those who perished because they did not receive the love of the truth that they might be saved. They were held captive. Mr. Armstrong wrote a good book on that, or good articles about the world held captive. It is held captive by the devil. Unrighteous deception is going to prevent people from receiving the truth of God, because the God of this world has blinded them. It says that in Corinthians. 2020 as a year showed us how universal a blinding can be. How compliance, whether you agree with it or not, that's not the issue here, okay? Don't get me wrong. Whether you agree with some of the things or not, but it shows it can happen around the world. It's never happened like that before. Same things, same restrictions basically everywhere, except for Florida, which is prospering, which is doing fine. by the way. How compliant can people be? You know, I think sometimes now that they have seen, the leaders, I think that now that they have seen that they can exercise this kind of power, I think that they just kind of make other things up just to see, oh, will they do that too? You know, look, I think that they're getting their jollies off. This is, you know, this is what I truly believe. That if, you know, I had a dream about me and Dr. Fauci being on a panel the other day, it was more like a nightmare, but I was doing Fauci, I was doing his voice, and Fauci was doing himself. You know, one mask, no, we don't need to wear them. One mask, you don't need to wear them. Now we do need to wear a mask, and now you got to wear two masks, so. Three, is that coming next? I mean, it just seems like they're going after the world's population to see just exactly what, will you stand on your head now and wear a mask? What will you do? Jot this down, 2 Corinthians chapter 4 and verse 4. Whose minds the God of this age has blinded, who did not believe, lest the light of the glory of Christ, who is the image of God, should shine on them. And for this reason, verse 11, back in 2 Thessalonians, for this reason God will send them strong delusion that they should believe the lie. God's going to allow it. He allowed Satan to attack Job. He allows this to happen to fulfill his purpose. And it kind of unfolds. It's not God sending delusions. God sends light, truth. He allows the devil, he takes away the restraint, allows him to not be restrained. The time is going to come when people are presented with the truth, but they reject it. Christ did say the gospel would be preached in all the world as a witness to all nations, and then the end would come. So whether it's by public proclamation, angelic or human witnesses, you can bet it's going to be done. Now, I don't fret over the means, and I hope you don't either. We just know that it's going to happen. Verse 12 says that they all may be condemned who did not believe the truth, but had pleasure in unrighteousness. As deception grows, there is a certain payback for those who are part of the system, who are loyal to the system. And the last of the prophecies, which I'm not going to spend any time on, is the last one. You'll have to read it on your own. We're out of time. Is Revelation 13, verse 11 and on to the end of the chapter. But I do want to make this point. It speaks about the mark of the beast. Look, don't send me links of what the mark of the beast is, okay? I know what the mark of the beast is, and you should too as well. It's so simple. It's not a tracking device on your smartphone. It's not them being able to triangulate your position with Google. It's not the high tech. That's not the mark of the beast. Okay, it's all simple. We've preached it for years. The mark of the beast is your compliance and your willingness to worship on the first day of the week. You're going to love it. You're going to love it. It's a spiritual thing. It's not a technical thing, although don't discount the fact that technical things, they've got trackers now, they can find out, you know, who you've been in contact. If you got your smartphone turned on that way, it'll track you. Yeah, Android, Google, and Apple both have these things. They're all, you have to install it, or you have to take it off, which I have. But it can track, okay, who you've come into contact with vis-a-vis all the people that have reported cases. I mean, it's sophisticated. They've been working on this stuff. It's incredible. But I love technology. Technology can be used for an evil purpose. Yeah, they can round people up and put them in camps, which they said they want to do, to people that don't agree with them. And all of that is out there. I mean, they always signal their intentions. You know, we should round up all the conservatives, put them in a camp to re-educate them, take their children away from them. That sounds so crazy and weird and strange. And yeah, that's the abnormal. That's the abnormal. The mark of the beast, we can see this a little bit easier as Peter said, we're getting edging closer and closer. We can see how that could happen. Because if the world goes through a crisis, And this power that is mentioned in Revelation 13 comes along with some solutions, and you've got a mighty, mighty leader and a partner in a false prophet that makes you comply, then you'll willingly go to church on Sunday or else you won't have a job. You will not be able to go to the grocery store and buy. You know, even I mentioned this to our ministers on our elders forum. I said, what are we, and you know, I'm not commenting anymore, but what if you need to have a vaccine in order to travel? It's not far-fetched. So if they can do that, and I believe they will, you can't get on a plane. Sounded far-fetched a year ago. Wouldn't have believed it. Now it's not so far-fetched. Okay, you'll just give up travel? Okay, what else will you give up? I mean, I'm not saying you can do anything about it. I'm just saying the world is changing fast. What is normal is not going to be normal in 2 months, 3 months, 5 months, a year. So God will protect you. God will protect you. Revelation 13 is a description of what is so abnormal, outside of the realm of what seems normal. We may very well be at the time when many prophecies which allude to the latter times, perilous times, are unfolding out before us. We have to be aware. Evil men will get worse and worse, and it's because, as Solomon said in Ecclesiastes 8, justice against an evil work is not executed speedily. They're not going to give up. Evil people are not going to give up. Remember the premises that I've given today. Some of them may apply to you, some of them may not. Maybe none of them do. Maybe all of them do. I don't know. But evil is going to continue. It's like the snowball that begins on Mount Everest and cascades all the way down and engulfs the world. It's coming. It's coming. One last point. Second Peter chapter 2 and verse 1. The reason that I've given this sermon today is this. Peter said there would be also false prophets among the people, even as there are false prophets among you who will secretly bring in destructive heresies, even denying the Lord who bought them and bring on themselves swift destruction. It could happen in a spiritual way. Chapter 3 and verse 1, he says, and I'll conclude with this, "Beloved, I now write to you this second epistle, in both of which I stir up your pure minds by way of reminder, that you may be mindful of the words which were spoken before by the holy prophets and of the commandment of us, the apostles of our Lord and Savior." Try and filter current events through the premises I've given, I've presented, and most of all, use these prophetic words to draw nearer to God.